The Senate's responsibility to weigh in on Supreme Court nominations was laid out in Article II of the Constitution back in 1789. But the confirmation process, as it exists now, arguably began in 1987 with the nomination of Robert Bork. The ideological clashes that led to Bork's rejection set the stage for the current model, where conservatives and liberals regularly mobilize opposing teams to attack or champion a given nominee. That's the premise of the documentary Advise and Dissent, directed by David Van Taylor. The film covers the seven-month period in 2005-2006 that included the nominations of John Roberts, Harriet Myers, and Samuel Alito. David Van Taylor joins me now from our New York bureau. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Looking ahead to Elena Kagan's confirmation hearings, what do you expect?
Well, unfortunately, the other template that was set from Bork or as a reaction to Bork really has been of the stealth nominee, or as Manuel Miranda, who's the conservative activist with whom we spend time behind the scenes in Advise and Dissent, says, the vanilla strategy employed most notably in the film by John Roberts. The idea is that to avoid a Borking, presidents have tended to choose people with very little paper trail, very little record, and then encourage them, apparently, to say as little as possible to the Senate. John Roberts had been on the bench only a very brief time before he was nominated to the Supreme Court. Elena Kagan, of course, has no record as a judge at all, and as an academic, though she's quite distinguished, has actually written relatively little. So I fear that that's the model that we're in for.
And the so-called vanilla process, the Sotomayor, John Roberts, potentially Elena Kagan model, contrasts with, say, Justice Alito, who did have opinions on record and was confirmed anyway.
Yes. Alito really had too much of a track record to run from entirely. And at the end of the film, I don't want to give anything away, but that same conservative activist essentially crows after Alito's victory that the curse of Bork has been blown out of the water, that at least for conservatives and Republicans, it now seems possible to get somebody confirmed to the Supreme Court who has an openly conservative view of the law.
Well, of course, in the 2005-2006 window, you've got Democratic Senator Pat Leahy and Republican Senator Arlen Specter on the Judiciary Committee, and they're sort of respectful opponents. Arlen Specter is now a Democrat, and he is fighting to win the Democratic Party primary this Tuesday. How does that change things?
Well, whether Arlen Specter wins or loses his primary race and then the general election, this film actually, I think, is a pretty interesting window into how he got to the place where he is. You know, the feeling that one gets from watching Advise and Dissent is that Senator Specter was really caught in a vice and didn't know how to get out of it. And maybe his party switch was ultimately the way that he got out of it. I would say that Senator Specter and Senator Leahy had more than a respectful relationship. I think they had a mutually admiring relationship and a close one. And unfortunately, what happens in the film, you see how very, very difficult and perhaps impossible that kind of bipartisan across the aisle relationship has become.
There's a moment in the film after the Judiciary Committee vote on Samuel Alito, which was along party lines, when Senator Specter reacts to that fact.
I think that in the selection of a Supreme Court justice, it is not a healthy thing for the country to have the selection made along a party line. It carries with it the overwhelming suggestion that it's a political decision. And I think that is not good for America.
Well, of course, the terrible irony of that reaction from Senator Specter is that if you were going to look for someone who was most likely not to vote along party lines, it would have been Senator Specter himself. So when he decries the fact that it was a party line vote, it's really a cry from the heart, I think, on his part, saying, I wish that I could have done something different, but I didn't feel I could.
So do you think the process as it is in the post-Bork era, where presidents choose somewhat safe, confirmable nominees, the nominee says next to nothing and has as little paper trail as is possible for a professional. And outside interest groups, you know, hit the phone banks immediately upon finding out who the nominee is. Do you think that's the process for the foreseeable future? I mean, what would change it?
Boy, I sure hope not. I think the only thing that could change it is small d Democratic influence. I think that if enough people get fed up with this process, and interestingly enough, in the Sotomayor confirmation, you saw Democratic senators expressing tremendous frustration at her lack of openness, which is kind of shocking. If enough people get sick of this, I think that you could have a movement of people saying what has been called the Specter standard. The Senate should not be confirming people who will not come and discuss their judicial philosophy, will not come and discuss what they believe about justice and what kind of justice they're going to be. Elena Kagan actually wrote in 1995 probably the most impassioned and reasoned argument that I've read for openness in judicial confirmations. Unfortunately, I recently read that she has openly disavowed that position now. And when asked, she said, my perspective has changed on that.
David Van Taylor, his documentary is called Advise and Dissent, Where the Supreme Court and Politics Collide. Thank you so much.
Thank you.